You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
That's right. Welcome to episode 31 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast. We broadcast on Middle Earth Network Radio, as well as on the Star Wars Report website. Our episodes are also found on our Facebook page at SW Beyond Films. But enough about how you got here. Let's get this show started. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, Mark Herleman. And with me, like a frigate full of Sith you just can't leave in the past, the EU guru himself, Nathan P. Butler.
Hello, everyone. Hello. We should probably let you know there's a couple of droids involved this time around. We got Whistler, but it would appear that Mark is appearing via proxy. So just like in The Force Unleashed, every now and then we're all having some sound issues this time around. But if you can bear with us, we should be good to go on this, I hope.
Oh no, not technical difficulties.
I'm sure there are people out there
get on
thinking,
it, Whistler.
People out there are thinking, oh no, not The Force Unleashed. But I like The Force Unleashed, man. Anyway,
what are we talking about today, Nathan?
Well, folks, as always, here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we ask the tough questions, questions that have bothered you for a long time, simple ones that have perplexed you off and on. You ponder about Star Wars, and so do we. This episode, we are taking a look at Paul S. Kemp's core duology, that is, Cross Current and Riptide, along with some of the implications of it in the broader EU here. Consider this your spoiler warning, because here we go.
That's right, the first book of this series is Cross Current. Now, the great thing I like about this book is it starts out set 5,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, and then jumps to 41.5 years after the Battle of Yavin, a story set in two time frames. And one of the things that I enjoy about this fact is we've got a plethora of characters here that deal in these two time zones coming together, a mesh-up, if you will. We've got Drev Hassan, and I may be saying these names a little different than some of you, but that's just because I'm from Oregon and we say things funny. Jedi Padawan, he's also a male Askajan. We also have Jaden Kor, Jedi Knight, male, human. Kel Duro, assassin spy, male Enzat. Kendrin Fall, captain of the Junker, a male human. Mar-Iddy Shale, first mate and a male Kreon. Raylan Drero, Jedi Master, male human. And C.S. Rorgan, Sith Lord, former Jedi, captain of the Harbinger, who's a male Kalish. Also looks kind of like General Grievous for those of you EU fanatics out there. But the thing I like the most about the beginning of this book is that we actually see events that you also witness in Lost Tribe of the Sith Precipice. The same accident that strands the Lost Tribe also kicks the Harbinger into the future.
And you know, that's also, of course, you know, this is a tie-in, one of the first tie-ins we've gotten in later EU, back to the Golden Age of the Sith comics. We had Tales of the Jedi that started out with the stories from, 4,000 up until 3,986, I think it is, or 3,986 years before the Battle of Yavin, where it's basically the story of Ulik Keldroma and Nomi Sunrider, Exar Kun. And a lot of times, that seems like it's been referenced. You know, it shows up with the Jedi Academy trilogy, where Exar Kun comes back with the spirit on Yavin 4 and everything. Even Dark Empire uses some of that text in the back of the original comics, I guess combined at the end of the trade paperback, to go into the story of Exar Kun and Ulik Keldroma and such. But while there's a lot of background built around that other era of Tales of the Jedi, the Golden Age of the Sith era, the 5000 BBY era, it seems like it's not nearly as heavily referenced in later stories. Lots of use in backstory books like Essential Guides, but not really a whole lot of stories. So it's very cool to see not just one, but two stories being published in recent memory that are delving back into the Golden Age of the Sith, when the Sith Empire, led by Naga Sadow, in his rivalry with Ludo Kresh, sort of jumps the gun and invades the Republic, thanks to Gav and Jori Darragon accidentally showing him the way by finding themselves in the Sith Empire in the Stygian Caldera. And now, with that war ending, you know, we know the war is ending, we've seen it in the comics, here we are with the ability now to see sort of a remnant of that with the Harbinger and with the Omen. Harbinger for this and Omen for Lost Tribe of the Sith. I was excited, and I'm still excited to see that era finally getting some play in the broader future of the EU.
Yeah, and I'm excited about the tie-in. I mean, I'm right now I'm reading the Lost Tribe of the Sith, the collected stories, and I'm going back over Precipice. And I suggest, you know, if you've read Cross Current or Riptide or you plan on it, you might want to check this book out as well, because, you know, like Nathan said about this era, there's some little tidbits about what's going on with the Harbinger crew from the Omen crew's point of view. The Captain Corson, he looks at Siace in his mind and how he was a former Jedi and how no one could trust him, and what Sado is going to do because the Omen couldn't make it. And the same issue is happening on the Harbinger. They were both supposed to get these lignum crystals to Sado in time for the big fight. And due to the efforts of Raylan and his apprentice, Drev, we see that it comes not to what they were hoping, but instead catastrophe, which also has later ramifications in the EU, as we see later with the Lost Tribe showing up in Fate of the Jedi. You know, another thing about this story, though, that I like that Paul S. Kemp did, now correct me if I'm wrong here, Cross Current was Paul S. Kemp's first voyage into Star Wars, right?
It was.
That's right. And he did a lot of little background checking. You know, I mean, you know, we just got done having an episode where we talked about how hard and daunting and inaccessible this is. And Paul S. Kemp did a really, really good job of pleasing this EU fan. I mean, there were references to the One Sith in here. We had the old stuff going on. You know, there was so much going on. I mean, the ship that the main characters in this story are flying is one like Dash Rendar's, a YT-2400. Little things like this. I mean, and they don't even point that out. But as an EU fan like myself, that's where I get the joy of an author that takes just enough time to add those little minute details that don't, you know, conflict the story. I mean, he didn't have to worry so much about how these little things connected. He just had to throw a reference out there, and I, as a fan of the broader EU, recognize that. Oh, a YT-2400. Ooh, just like Dash Rendar's ship. And I gotta give my hats off to Paul S. Kemp here. I mean, I really, really enjoyed what we got in Cross Current. I mean, by the time we get to Korriban and the One Sith are mentioned, and you know, Kel Duro, his character, he knows who Darth Krayt is, which immediately had me going, whoa, what's going on here? You know, there were so many little things like that it was just an off sentence here, or a character, like I say, with Kel, knowing who Krayt was and knowing enough about the One Sith, I wanted to know how. I was like, ooh, where's this going?
See, I'll give it to Kemp, but I almost have to give it to Kemp for Riptide, but not as much for Cross Current. He does a really good job of doing what I think a lot of times new writers to the EU should do if they're not heavily versed in the backstory, though he did grab a lot of nifty little tidbits as he went along, which is tying together eras without necessarily having to tie together the same characters. Like, we don't see Naga Sadow. We don't see Ludo Kresh. We're not seeing all these Jedi and Sith characters from the Tales of the Jedi comics in the whole original Great Hyperspace War. But instead, we get this offshoot. New characters, they were off on a separate mission. The Omen and the Harbinger are out there getting those lignin crystals. There's the attack, thanks to Relan and his Padawan. And in trying to escape, there's the crash between the two ships. Omen winds up going off course and winds up crashing down on Kesh, hence all the Lost Tribe of the Sith stuff. Meanwhile, the Harbinger leaps to hyperspace, and he does a good job of not introducing heavy time travel in a mainstream Star Wars novel. Time travel's been in there before, but he doesn't do something that makes it so there's like a ship that can travel in time, or something from the future that comes back to the present and drags them around. Instead, it's time dilation. So he's got a ship that basically it's traveling pretty close to the speed of light, but not actually past it. It's not in hyperspace, so time just travels time moves a different amount based on the theory of relativity and whatnot, based on real science, which has been used in Star Wars before, but not nearly in this big of a mainstream way. So he's able to tie two time periods together, bring characters from two different eras together. But I gotta say, as much as there's references to the One Sith, and the One Sith are the ones who send Kel Duro out to try to get involved in this mission, and eventually to find that old Thrawn facility that has clones in it, these mad Jedi clones that wind up getting more detail in the second book, I really kind of feel like there were a lot of dropped balls in this book. If Riptide hadn't come in, and given us more of a reason why the one Sith would be trying to get involved in this at all, other than visions. If they had not given us in Riptide more to these mad Jedi clones than just they're like creepy Jedi clone zombie looking things that rare they're going to kill you, I don't think I would feel as positive about Cross Current as I do. I liked Cross Current. I really liked Riptide. And together they make a whole that's greater than the sum of their parts. But as good as Cross Current was, those were always things that kind of nagged at me a little bit, because it seems like there are a few instances where things like the one Sith are used just to kind of be there. It's kind of like the one Sith in Fate of the Jedi. Until Apocalypse, there really doesn't feel like there's any reason for them to have any involvement whatsoever in Fate of the Jedi, and almost don't even need to have their involvement in Fate of the Jedi at all until Troy Denning says, yeah, by the way, you know that whole vision thing? There's actually a tie-in here. And you're like, oh, now we see why you shoehorned in this other group. So I don't know. He does well. And as a first-time Star Wars author with Cross Current, he does quite well. And I've really liked all of his Star Wars books. Deceived was really, really good, too.
Yeah.
It just kind of felt like he was a little bit grasping at straws, just a little, in Cross Current. But then you realize, when you get to Riptide, oh, see, this is where the payoff is. It makes me wonder if, you know, if he knew about Riptide prior to the final draft of Cross Current being written, if maybe they had already signed him up for that other book, because I'm not sure when those contracts were made. Certainly we didn't know about Riptide, I don't think, until Cross Current was actually released, but surely he must have known something. Otherwise, why plant the seeds here? It was either clumsy or it was beautiful planting of seeds. One of the two.
Yeah, and I'll give you that. I mean, for me, I think that it was planned. And of course, you know, I'm making a huge assumption there, but it felt planned. Like you said, the payoff was definitely in Riptide. I want to lean towards it was done on purpose. I kind of hope that the untitled Kemp duology is going to continue with what we've got. We'll talk about a little more of that as we speculate at the end of, once we've discussed these two books as a collective. But yeah, you're definitely right on that, that I don't think had Riptide come out and gave us that with the one Sith, it would have been as pleasing. Because even now, when it's both done, there's a whole aspect of what went down with the one Sith that I want to know more about. And I think, you know, when it comes to the publishing side of things, this is probably a good time for us to get that story, because I want to say, you know, in the last 8 years or so, we have started seeing the Sith point of view. It was something that was not done in the Bantam era. They would not do it. And now we're starting to get it. And in fact, with Darth Bane being as popular as it was, it became like, let's all start doing Darth stories. And then all of a sudden, you know, now we've got Darth Plagueis, who we weren't going to have. But it's one of those things where, you know, you have to wonder if they're going to give us a one Sith story down the road, because there are a lot of tie-ins with the one Sith going on right now in the comics, in the books, maybe not so much in the games, but they could. You know, there's definitely a lot going on, and there's a lot going on in the aspect of the clones and the cloning. That's been a topic that I have wanted to see a book focus on for the longest of times. When The Force Unleashed came out, I really thought that was a prime opportunity for them to tie a lot of things that we knew about Sparty clone cylinders and the Yasmiri and all these other things, kind of give us like a reason why some things weren't working and some things were, and this and that. And they did a pretty good job of it, but I really felt like they could have done more there. This series, though, definitely, I want to say there was some moments, though, with Jaden Kor's character that had me scratching my head. I mean, he was able to call on the Sith lightning, the Force lightning, as it were, almost not even on purpose. It was almost instinctual. Like, he'd flex his hand and it would come up. And a lot of those things, like, it kind of bothered me a little bit, but not too bad. I mean, I was like, okay, we can go with this.
I think they've finally given us some more with that, though I'm not sure. I guess it was published around the same time. I don't have the publishing dates in front of me. In Jedi vs. Sith, The Essential Guide to the Force, I mentioned on a previous show how I've read, like, four freaking essential guides or whatever. I've read Jedi Path, Book of Sith, Jedi vs. Sith, Essential Guide to the Force, Essential Guide to Warfare, The Essential Atlas, and just recently also The Essential Guide to Alien Species. I am essential guided out this summer. But in the process of reading Jedi vs. Sith, a lot of times after the main bulk of the text, there's these little journal entry type things, these messages that somebody is sending in. Because the idea is that these are from the old Jedi archives, so they're seeing messages sent by one Jedi, say, to the Jedi Council or whatever when they're reporting in. And there's a point where, I believe it was Saisi 10, It was either Saisi 10 or it was Plo Koon. Actually, I think it was Plo Koon. But he's on a mission, and there is a bad guy who winds up trying to take a little girl hostage. If I remember right, in the process of that mission, he winds up using Force Lightning against the enemy. And he's having to basically now, it's almost like he's grounded. He reports back on his use of the Force Lightning as part of his report, and the Jedi Council require him now to sit in meditation and contemplate his use of such an ability.
Was it Tin or was it Koon? I thought it was Koon.
I think it was Plo Koon.
Because he used to be able to use it.
He makes the argument, though, that, you know, if he had to do it all over again, he'd probably do it again, because he sees that it's a matter of how it's used. It's very much like what you would hear Jason or Verger talking about late in the New Jedi Order, that there's a matter of intent that makes the difference, that Force Lightning in and of itself isn't necessarily something that's going to pull you to the dark side. You can draw on it so long as it's being done in a positive way. Because you can also make the same argument about lightsaber dueling. I mean, if your intent is to use the Force to block a lightsaber or to block a blaster bolt with your lightsaber, but it goes and hits the person square in the face and kills them, you can make the argument you just intentionally killed someone using a Force power. That's the dark side. But you never really get that type of argument. So it's got to be something to do with your intention. But he seems like there's at least a little bit of precedent for having Jedi using Force Lightning, although it's generally frowned upon, which would make sense of why Jaden is unnerved by the fact that it keeps happening.
Well, and especially because of everything that went down with him and Jason. I mean, I remember in Darkness, they really played that up, the using certain powers in a positive way. Luke had an emerald lightning that knocked people out. Jason had that ability to touch him and send a zap to him and knock him out. But that seemed to be like a start of a schism almost in fandom, where some people saw that as going away from what Lucas had intended for the Jedi, and that the EU was messing things up by going there. But then you see kind of like that a turnaround in Luke's character's point of view, where Luke himself is like, no, that's not good. We shouldn't be doing even that anymore.
Well, could you maybe make the argument? I mean, let's say you've got a character who is deathly ill and in great pain. They're going to die. They're in great pain. But you go up to them and you heal them just enough that now they'll experience that great pain of their last few moments all over again. Maybe someone who has 6 hours of pain before death after a long illness, let's say. And you heal them up to the point where the pain starts and you just let them get pained again. And then you heal them and let them feel the pain again. And you use that as a torture technique to get information. You're healing. Is that of the light side? I mean, you can make the argument that's the dark side at work. You are torturing someone with the Force.
Well, that's almost the heart of Legacy, isn't it? I mean, because Cade's power was that way, where, you know, the Darksiders, they really wanted to get a hold of that, and it was like, whoa, dude, you know, you're doing something totally unnatural, man.
That's true. He was drawing on the dark side to do that. Speaking of dark activities here, back when we had the old show, the EU Review, when me and Andrew were doing that, I did criticize, and there were others who also criticized, the fact that Jaden in this book is, the first book, Cross Current, he is really wishy-washy. He's doubting himself, and gee, I don't know what I should do and who I should be. And there was a lot of concern that maybe the character that was going to be our lead character in Scourge was going to be the same way. Turns out he wasn't. But all of it stems back to another good instance of Kemp using recent EU as a backdrop to build characters from. It's all stemming back to the idea that during the taking of Centerpoint Station, Jaden Kor, somewhere off-screen to us during Legacy of the Force, spaced some people, some prisoners. There wasn't time to deal with them, I think it was, and he spaces them. And he's been dealing with the guilt from that and his activities within that civil war, that recent civil war, to cause him these doubts. Again, he wasn't referring to one specific scene, I don't think, in Legacy of the Force. It wasn't like you had to have read Legacy of the Force to get where the doubts were coming from.
Yeah, it was a scene that was added after the fact, wasn't it? I don't recall that scene ever taking place. And I thought that was a great little touch. I like it when they do that and it works like that. It was like, well, we had this whole scene that happened that you didn't see, but it didn't conflict with anything, so it works.
But that's it. I mean, that's what Kemp did with the stuff from Tales of the Jedi, and that's what Kemp did with Jaden Kor. I mean, he's really good at saying, you know, you don't need to know the little nuances. We can make this accessible. See? See, Dark Horse, you can make things that are accessible that yet deal with time periods we've seen before and characters we've seen before. In this case, a character we hadn't really seen very much since, you know, old video games. But I think he handles it well. Riptide works a lot better for me than Cross Current does, and leaves more interesting questions than Cross Current does, because Cross Current seemed to me much more straightforward. It seems like it's sort of the classic Star Wars thing where events conspire to bring characters together, and then they go off on what amounts to a climactic mission that's going to have multiple locations so that the battle can take place on multiple fronts. In this case, we've got Relan having to deal with Sais, his former Padawan, who was the captain of the Harbinger, while Jaden and Kedron and Mar are having to deal with Kel and deal with this old cloning facility. So you've got that sort of Star Wars-y sense, but unlike most Star Wars films, things don't sort of wrap up at the end and tie back together nearly as neatly. Yeah. It almost feels like when they do split, they're completely split in most respects. But, you know, I mean, that can make for good storytelling. In this case, it did make for good storytelling. It just didn't feel like it was quite as neatly tied up. It seemed much more straightforward of, here's the bad guy, go get him. Here's the mystery, go investigate. That's it. There wasn't like a twist, really, that seemed like it drew it back together in some intense way right there at the end.
Well, there's definitely the feeling that these are two books that are meant to be, you know, one. You know, Jaden's character, like you mentioned, the whole not feeling, you know, sure about himself and all that. I like the way it played out. You know, Relan especially, I think that's the thing about Cross Current that I enjoyed so much was Relan's character and his point of view. I mean, that guy, for a Jedi Master, he took a beating. I mean, before he even gets to the future, he loses an arm, nearly loses himself to the dark side even. I mean, and then he still gets messed up pretty good by the time this book was over. But when they get to the cloning facility, you know, all this kind of takes place in a very short period of time. And I think that's one of the things I like about this book. It's like, it's a book that almost all the events take place in a day or within like a 4 or 5 hour period kind of thing. Both books felt that way. You know, like it felt like it could have been a weekend adventure kind of thing, not like a month long thing like some of these other books have been going. And I actually really like that slowing down and kind of getting into the moment of the story. You know, when we get to what is it? Was it Fost? Was it Fost that the facility was on?
Well, he goes to Fost to be able to get to that, I believe, unnamed planet in the unknown region. So I don't think the target planet ever got a name.
Okay, so the target planet, that's the one that where the cloning facility is at, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so when we get to that point, everything in this book, for me, turned very Death Troopers. I mean, the whole turn of Cross Current got very dark once we got to that facility. And then, boom, we had the clones. And that was definitely where for me, the mystery really kind of kicked up a notch. You know, they're writing, they're stop looking at us. It's like, whoa, what's going on? They're the pit of bodies. I'm like, dude, this is getting very dark very fast. And, you know, you're dealing with Relan, his character, and how he is bent on stopping the Harbinger still. Doesn't matter for him, you know, a moment has only passed. And when they had those scenes with him sitting inside Junker and he's talking with Jaden and everything, those scenes for me are some of my bread and butter. You know, I mean, when you have moments where a Jedi from this generation is able to talk to a Jedi from the past generation, I live for those moments in a book. You know, Luke's had many run-ins with past Jedi, and most of them all happen off book. And, you know, like Kruk. Kruk is around. Where is he? He's not in the books. But so I die for this stuff. And when they had it, I found a lot of the character interactions was really cool for me. And I think that was, for me, all the way around with Paul S. Kemp's stuff, the characters really brought things to it. I mean, the mystery involved with everything, there are a lot of open holes that he could go back and write stories. Kendron Fall, we learned that Fall is actually Fell, that he was on Outbound Flight, that he was part of the Fell family. I mean, I'm just like, whoa, crazy little tie-in there. And I mean, so crazy, I don't even know if it's going to cause a conflict with the Fell family tree, because I know that's already a convoluted little tree. So, but it was one of those things where that little tie-in made Kendron's character all that more deep for me, because he had a natural distrust for the Jedi. And granted, that's not played up, the distrust, so much in Riptide. By the time Riptide comes, Kendron's kind of all on board that he trusts the Jedi, but I think that's part of where Kendron's story in Cross Current comes to a close. I mean, Jaden's able to show him that, his perceptions of Jedi are false. And there's a lot of character-driven moments in these books.
See, I never got the Fel connection. I mean, maybe it's something that I missed somewhere along the line. I got the connection with Outbound Flight, and that he was at the readout. But I guess my brain skipped over anything about any tie to the Fel family tree for him. I do like the fact that they were able to bring together a Jedi of this era and a Jedi of the past, but Relan, quite frankly, Relan was not a very deep character. Relan was scarred by the death of his Padawan at the beginning of the story, and he's just a one-track mind kind of dude. I mean, he really did not seem as though he was, obviously he's not the model Jedi from back then, but then again, yeah. Jaden's not the model Jedi of now, but at the same time, I mean, Relan really did not seem like he got very many dimensions to his character. It sort of felt like, Jaden got a chance to be all introspective, and to a degree, the pilot and co-pilot of the Junker got a chance to be a little bit introspective. Kel Duro even got a tiny bit of introspection. Relan, not so much. I would have liked to have seen a little more depth to the Relan character as more of a point-counterpoint between him and Jaden. Otherwise, it almost felt like Relan at this point, as driven as he is to ignore everything else and go after the Harbinger and whatnot, it almost felt like Relan, by the time the story was over, Relan had basically fallen to the dark side, or at least was very close to it because of his urges of just one-track mind, I must kill, yeah. I must stop. And that did not make him a very dynamic character. Jaden, yes. Relan, not so much.
I think for me the appeal there was he reminded me of the Punisher. You know, he's like, of all the Jedi, he's the Punisher. Here I come. I'm gonna. And you knew he was going to fall. I mean, and they stop him from falling, but man, he skirted very close. You're just like, oh man, are they going to have to kill him before he gets even to the ship? Another character, though, that I really dug was Mar. Okay, Mar was the Korean navigator. He was Kendrin's partner. And in Riptide especially, by the time Mar becomes Jaden's apprentice, you see a questioning of how that's going to affect the relationship between Kendrin and Mar. And, as that plays out, that was always fun. But when Mar becomes Force-sensitive, to the readers, when you find out that he's Force-sensitive, I like the way they played it up about how he used numbers and math and equations and all that, and that he'd always had this natural affinity with that, and he just didn't realize that it was the Force. And, of course, Jaden, he recognized it right away, needs some help, they worked it out.
You're using all those numbers in that giant Saria noggin of yours, I will say I like the interaction back and forth between him and Kedrin and him and Jaden, and then when those two together wind up conflicting, is he going to be the co-pilot or is he going to be the Jedi apprentice? How does he balance these things? Is he going to leave Kedrin? How does Kedrin feel about that? Very human moments. It's the kind of thing that any parent goes through when a kid's about to go off to college. It's when you and your loved ones are going separate ways in life. It works on a human level. On the other hand, by the time we get into Riptide and all of a sudden Mar is using lightsabers and such, it kind of felt like they took his training and fast forward it to an unreasonable, unrealistic degree. Like, I would have expected if this was a movie that between the two books we would have had a montage with some power 80s music showing him practicing, because he's way better at these Jedi skills in Riptide than it seems like he has any right to be based on the fact that he didn't do any of this as of Cross Current.
That's because he is the Jedi Rain Man. It's all about numbers, definitely numbers, definitely numbers. I mean, they kind of went that route. It was like, well, you're so good at numbers, let's focus on this as angles and trajectories and things like that. And so I guess I retconned it in my mind right then and there that obviously he's like Michael Schofield from Prison Break. He just sees a lamp and sees the bolts, the wires, the nuts, and what size, and all of them in a glance. I mean, but they definitely played up that he was super smart in the first one, and I think that what you didn't see in Riptide, I just associated the one to the other, that obviously his use of numbers and math, he applied that and it gave him a very, very short learning curve.
Yeah, I would hope. I mean, I could sort of see that. I mean, having just gotten into, I'm going back and reading the classic Sherlock Holmes now, and I haven't gotten into any instances of him doing any kind of hand-to-hand brawling or anything yet. I've read a couple books and about five short stories or whatever now. But the Sherlock Holmes film with Robert Downey Jr., the first one, makes good use of the idea of him looking at an opponent, being able to pick out, okay, if I hit him here, this will happen, this will incapacitate, this will take the wind out of him for X amount of hours, he won't be able to recover until such and such, I've got time to get by him, and you see all the little bits and pieces of the movement, and then everything goes back into regular speed, and boom, 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 the guy's knocked out. I could see Marr being able to do something like that, especially with the Force, because we've seen the Force almost sometimes as almost a bullet time type thing, where they're able to perceive things at a different rate than everything else and able to, you know, I can dodge bullets, as Neo would say. yeah, it just seemed a little bit odd. I guess it would have helped to see more from his point of view in how he came up with those particular moves and such. Unless there was just something much more detailed in the combat sequences that somehow my mind skipped over because I tend to speed read a lot, but it just didn't seem like we had quite as much to make it quite as believable as it could have been. Your reasoning is spot on to what would make it work, and I think certainly he's mentioned it a couple of times, but I think it would have used a little bit more embellishment to really drive home. See, it's not that he's, you know, super Jedi, it's that his mind lets him do certain things more. Because they talked all the time back in the day about, you know, well, not just anybody can use a lightsaber. Those things, you know, you can just cut your arm off if you're not trained with them. And it seems like, you know, a lot more in, especially about the last 10 years of Star Wars novels, it's pretty much like anybody can use a lightsaber, you know? It's yeah. Whether they use it with any skill, but I don't really tend to see much in the way of people, oh no, he's going to cut off his own nose, like it used to be.
Yeah, exactly. You know, another thing about this, you know, we mentioned how the One Sith kind of come and go. They were kind of almost a blip on the radar. That's where I lean on the speculation side that there's going to be more to tell here. You know, there was definitely a lot of open plot holes. The One Sith, the same One Sith founded by Darth Krayt even, they're seeing things behind the scenes. We've got Krayt's getting visions of dark power, which obviously, to me, is the Lignum Crystals themselves. In Riptide, we watch how they affect the clone Jedi and how that works out. And so they send Kel Duro off to follow this. And this is what kind of sets their plan for the next book into motion. It's like at this point, they don't really know what's going on. They just have the sense of the power. And then based off of what they find, the second book kicks off. But okay, so we know that the cloning facility is a Grand Admiral Thrawn-era cloning facility, which to me would seem to be that we would have Yelsmiri there blocking the Force. Now, I, at the top of my head at this moment, can't recall if we actually had them in the facility, if there were ever any points where he was cut off from the Force. It's been long enough that I'm actually drawing a blank as to that.
You know, I don't recall off the top of my head. The only thing that I can recall out of these books that really blocked the Force actively was Nyss, and that was always something that left me scratching my head. Really? You're going to have a character who
that
can just
odd.
Blink the Force on and off?
That was, I mean, that's another one, yeah, as we get into that, it's like, whoa, what, really? Wow. I mean, there's a lot to the whole aspect of what was going on with the clones, why these clones were created, and what the One Sith is after. And it raises so much questions that, I don't know, I got to say, there's got to be a book here. There's got to be a book coming. If they don't have it planned, they need to do it, because I'm scratching my head. I want to know more.
Well, that pushes us into Riptide. And as much as Cross Current was a good book, I think Riptide's the one that leaves way, way more in the way of questions, and it has a lot more dynamic aspects to it. The fact that, all right, first off, you've got the cloning facility, and as we learn more about them, you know, we learn more about who was Alpha, the clone that Jaden killed. We meet Soldier, who's a clone of Jaden. We meet Seer, who's a clone of Shira Bree / Lumaya, and so on. We know what this mother thing was, sort of, that they were talking about. This mother thing is this entity within this Rakatan space station that's been closed off for ages. And we find that while those clones have their own mission that's getting fleshed out, and we're finding out more about those clones themselves, we find, oh, the One Sith, they've got clones of Jaden. Iterations, they call them, of Jaden Kor specifically. Now, I get the idea that Jaden Kor could be seen as a powerful Jedi based on the actions of the game Jedi Academy. But of all the Jedi to pick out, specifically to create a clone to essentially impersonate or to take the place of, why Jaden? And that seems like it's a question that's not really given enough of an answer. You know, why are they doing this? How many iterations are out there? There's so many more questions left from Riptide than from Cross Current.
And that's not even including the Prime. I mean, Soldier is also the Prime. And they've been looking for this Prime. So obviously, the Jaden clone started in the same facility. I mean, because we have a Prime that's with them, that grew up with them, that they know. These other clones know. The clones of Mara, the clones of Kyle, the clones of Cam. And that was the other thing. I mean, Cam, Solsar, Lamaya, and... No. Kyle and Lamaya. Those three we didn't know about in Cross Current. It was only kind of hinted that we knew there was a Cam Solsar clone and a Mara Jade clone. And multiples of. They didn't give you like, oh, we had a whole bunch. But in the next one, you find out, okay, there's also these other ones. But you have to wonder how all of that ties together and how the one Sith found the Jaden clone, because obviously they were looking for this other one. And when they find it, and the Rakuten technology, how that became. I mean, there's so many things. I'm like, I want a Darth Krayt book, man. I don't know. I'm there. Let's do it. Let's go from, you know, Jedi all the way to the time he dies. I don't know. I want some details here. I mean, there's a lot going on. You know, we've got him in the new Jedi Order. When he gets captured by the Vong and Verger, she's out there messing with his mind. You know, he goes and he founds the one Sith, then he goes into hiding. We got all these things going to Korriban, you know, and the one Sith are there. It's like, oh man, you know, and that's not even touching on Nyss. You know, we got Darth Warlock. We're seeing the different Darth Warlocks there. I mean, I believe what we at least see, what we were talking about is probably the first Darth Warlock, at least in Cross Current.
Yeah, because Warlock the second is a woman, and the third is the one in Legacy.
So, I mean, you know, give or take how long, you know, there have been Darth Warlocks. I mean, maybe the first Darth Warlock was only alive for a minute and a half, and the second one only lived for a month. I don't know. I mean, you can always see something like that happening down the road. I mean, we're still speculating as to whether Ben Skywalker is Cade Skywalker's grandfather or great-grandfather, because Luke and them are almost 95, and they're still about to have kids. But there was definitely some really cool things in Riptide that had me super excited. Nyss was one of them. Him and his sister really just tripped me out to no end. The Rakuten Mind Spear, like I said, I want to know how they got it. I want to know how all this ties together. When we look at the fact that the Jaden clone was on the Thrawn era facility, and that we have the iterations and the other ones that were somewhere else, there is a lot going on in that backstory that you know, like how Cross Current for us was better knowing Riptide. I wonder if these next two books are also going to use the story elements that were left out, whether it be set after Cross Current and Riptide or set before it, and we see kind of like how Outbound Flight, you know, did with Survivor's Quest, where we see the creation of these individuals. There was a lot of my mind blown when Kyle was cloned, when Jaden was cloned, and I'm like, where in the heck did they get all these samples, and why aren't there more? It gets me back to the whole interesting point of that.
A couple things back to that I think we can't assume too much yet. Soldier is not sick, but I'm not sure that he is necessarily the Prime clone in the sense that Jango Fett was the Prime clone for the clone troopers. He's special. He's different. But we've also got Alpha, who was old enough at that point to already have had two children. I think we're still waiting to see exactly why it is that Soldier is who he is. Though having him be like the source of other clones, like they're essentially copies of copies, might wind up making some sense. Kind of like the same way that the different Emperor's clone bodies, once sabotaged, they weren't quite as powerful as they should have been. The other thing that I'd come back to is there's not necessarily anything that says that the Jaden clones that the one Sith have, those iterations, have anything to do with the Thrawn facilities. You would think there'd have to be some type of tie between some old cloning facility. It seems a little odd that two cloning facilities would both have clones of Jaden Kor. But
yeah.
I don't necessarily see where we have a direct causal effect between those two yet, which begs the question, why Jaden? They do repeatedly say in Riptide that they're trying to make sure that Jaden is ready to fall at the right time. It's like he's going to fall to the dark side, whether they've had a vision or whatever, and they're trying to get him ready for it. Hence this weird Rakuten mind spear thing, where they can imbue a clone with essentially the mind of whoever it's programmed from. In the case of Jaden, as we see at the end of the book, getting deathly injured, Jaden getting his mind essentially copied onto the mind sphere and then put into the clone body as a way of the character surviving. So the ideas, I mean, they've jumped from, you know, you can do sort of personality implants like with, say, the Joruus Sabaoth clone, and have that be something that's part of the Spartai cloning cylinder process, et cetera, that was done on him. And now we've got this alternate method, presumably alternate, of, okay, we can clone someone and use this Rakatan technology to transfer their mind, their memories, everything else over to this other being, which again rolls back the question, okay, not just why Jaden, but why do they need a clone of Jaden? If Jaden is going to fall to the dark side, should they perhaps be manipulating him? What is it that makes them think this is so important? He is such a linchpin in their plans that they would have to have someone ready to essentially take his place or take whatever programming they want to give him. Because you would think if he fell to the dark side, he's going to be dangerous enough as it is, and he could be an asset to them as it is. But they didn't really try to make use of Jason. They didn't make use of Lumaya. They didn't make use of the Lost Tribe. So what is it about this character when he goes to the dark side, as they're predicting, that makes him so special that not only are they worried about him, but they're willing to replace him? It seems like they've turned Jaden into this... He is the modern-day equivalent of Jason's vision that starts him off on everything for Legacy of the Force, or the Sword of the Jedi vision, where Troy Denning drops a couple lines here and there, and then it doesn't get fleshed out for years down the line. I'm hoping this is something with an intended payoff, that this isn't going to be something where it turns into the same thing as after the Jedi Academy villain video game, which would be, hey, what happened to Jaden Kor? Wasn't he cool? He's off doing something else.
Well, and the Sith, like I said, the Sith story, the one Sith side, is not told. I mean, in both books, the agent that they send out, and agents in the case of Riptide, fail in their mission. They all die. I mean, spoiler warning. But, you know, it's definitely like, okay, what were they going after? They have the iteration. They're looking to capture Jaden. Why do they even need the Prime? That was one of the things. I mean, there was a lot of questions I had. And I guess, like, I may be one of those that should be looking at this as a negative. But in this case, these questions have me hopeful. You know, I think back in the Bantam era, and there were a lot of books that left a lot of open plot holes. And I recall, you know, the fandom people were like, oh, this book was lousy. All these plot holes were left open. And then come the Del Rey era, you know, we'd start to see him get picked up again. You know, New Jedi Order, they took the Center Point Station and started running with that. And then we saw that picked up again in the later series. You definitely want to know what's going on and how much more are we going to get. The whole mind sphere aspect of this was just mind-boggling. It made me think of the Rakatan mind trap that they had in the KOTOR game, where if you answered the wrong question, you got transferred in, the Rakatan took your body, and you were stuck in the sphere. It was like at the dead end of the game, and you had to start over again. You're like, no, why did I say that one? Why didn't I save? But I don't know, there was just so much going on in both of these books that I really enjoyed. The Rakatan Mind Spear is just one of those things that when I stop and I think about what it implies to the character and Jaden, it's like, I'm blown away. I'm still just in shock. I mean, they killed Jaden Kor in this book. And then Mar, his apprentice, is the one who takes the Mind Spear and does what the one Sith wanted. And I keep coming around to, this can't be good. And there's got to be more coming. And there's that part of me that wishes that this is all planned out. I hope Paul S. Kemp at least has a good idea of what's going on, because I don't necessarily know if Delroy does. They always keep tight-lipped. They could have this all plotted out and planned out and have like a 12-book series all based around Jaden Kor and events off of what Jaden's going to do here. I don't know. I'm throwing a lot of speculation out here. But I think that's part of why I like this book so much. It left me thinking. I was pondering and contemplating and speculating.
Absolutely. The end of this duology, if you want to call it that, really caught me off guard. The idea of killing off Jaden and then having Mar have to use the Mind Spear to transfer his mind into the clone body so that the clone can essentially be Jaden Kor and live as Jaden Kor, even going so far as to cut off the fingers that he lost in Cross Current, though apparently not giving him the tiny, tiny scar on his face that allows him to realize when he looks in the mirror, how is that gone? Is it possible that I'm in a clone body? And sort of start his mind on that same issue. But you said, you know, that the one Sith, you know, their agents didn't succeed in their mission. Kind of.
You just mentioned about the fact that, you know, he saw the scar was gone. And I think about the psychological mind trip that happened to Peter Parker when Ben Reilly showed up and said, oh, hey, by the way, you're actually the clone and I'm Peter. And Peter Parker actually started to believe that he was the clone. And I think about how this is going to affect Jaden. I mean, here you're sitting in a body that sooner or later you're going to figure out this is not my body. And then you're going to start thinking about cloning. And in Star Wars, we don't know that much. I mean, we got details about cloning, but not that much. What is he going to start thinking? Is he going to think, like, I'm just a carbon copy of who I was before? I mean, obviously, because Mar's not going to mention the Mind Sphere, he's not going to have any knowledge that who he has as an individual and person has been transferred. He's just going to make an assumption. That can get scary. I mean, I think about how Parker made those assumptions, and it wasn't until the Ben Reilly clone disintegrated that he realized, holy cow, I'm actually Peter Parker. And it kind of, you know, slapped him back into reality, and he donned the suit again and went back to work. But I wonder if we're going to have a similar or opposite reaction with Jaden. I mean, I definitely hope that there is a plotted course for these characters in this story. It's something I'm enjoying a lot. I definitely think that there is going to be a tie-in to the overall mythos. Maybe Jaden's the Crucible. I don't know.
One thing that stands out about that, I mean, even if they don't do anything with this, I think it's a great cliffhanger to launch off something new or to continue this particular series, to bring Jaden Kor back at some point after this and see what he's struggling with that. I'm hoping this is not a cliffhanger like the end of, say, The Force Unleashed 2, where you just have to assume, oh yeah, at some point Vader must have escaped and something must have happened to that Starkiller that we're seeing. But yeah. I think there is a place where the comparison to The Force Unleashed is actually pretty called for, not just in the fact that it leaves us with a whoa, what kind of ending that we're hoping to see continue, but in the clone aspect. It's funny because Star Wars is a series that ever since, really 1976, since the novelization of A New Hope came out a few months before the film, and there was a reference to the Clone Wars, we'd known cloning was somehow involved in the Star Wars mythology. They weren't allowed to touch it for years. You had a little bit of touching on it with the stuff going on for the Thrawn trilogy, but you couldn't tell very much about the Clone Wars themselves, just cloning technology and bringing the Jedi, Joris Sabaoth and whatnot. But otherwise, can't really touch it too much. You know, little they did touch with it, they wound up getting messed up with the dates and such. But now, here we are, 2012, it's over 20 years of EU out there. We've seen clones when it comes to the Emperor. We've seen clones being used as soldiers. Now the movies have told us what Lucas's vision of clones are. It's opening up. And I think this is the new frontier for Star Wars when it comes to exploration of identity. You know, we get that with the Clone Wars now with, you know, are these soldiers just numbers? Are they men? They start as numbers. Then they take their own names. They're developing their own personalities. What value do they have as individuals? Certainly to someone like Pong Krell, not much. To Anakin and Ahsoka, quite a bit. What are they going to do when the war ends? How much free choice do they have? We saw with the episode The Deserter. And that has sort of opened that up a little bit, but the EU has done its share of it. We got this with Riptide. Is this really Jaden? Is there some programming already in that body, and now he is the agent the one Sith wanted to create in the first place, and Mar has done their job?
There is definitely programming, because when Nis went up against the Prime, and even later Jaden, the Prime and Jaden could withstand Nis's abilities, whereas the Iteration couldn't. He had that program word that shut him down.
True. We also have, though, just to keep on this idea of who am I, that type of identity crisis thing here, with the clones, at least it's, they know who they are. They're all clones of Jango Fett. It's not who am I, it's what value do I have, who can I be beyond what I was programmed to be. With this clone of Jaden, we have sort of that, you know, what makes me me? Is it my body or not? Because he knows that it's not, or he should know, this is not his real body. And he'll be questioning, you know, is this really my mind? Am I really me? as some have questioned with things like the Emperor Reborn and whatnot. But I think we've already got the groundwork for this type of thought laid out in The Force Unleashed 2. I mean, bash it as much as you like, because there's some folks out there who really bash The Force Unleashed stuff, though they're some of my favorite Star Wars games and Star Wars stories. But you take Starkiller. By the end of The Force Unleashed 2, he doesn't know whether he's really him or he's a clone.
Yeah,
he doesn't find out during the course of the story. We find out, because as you play the game and play the challenges, you unlock that little side story, that sort of motion comic type thing, the little cutscene type thing, where we see the original Starkiller's body from which the Dark Starkiller was made that shows up later in the game, and the other clones were made. So we know he's a clone. But he's dealing with that same type of issue. You know, who am I? Does what I feel for Juno, does the way that I think, does my personality and who this body was before it was cloned, if I'm a clone, does that make me me? Does it make a difference whether my body is different? You know, it goes back to Yoda, you know, luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. Okay, but if the crude matter is changed, do you remain a luminous being? We're so stuck on this idea that if a Jedi dies, and they retain their essence somehow through the Force, or a Sith dies and a Sith spirit is retained through the Force, that outside of the body, the spirit that exists is still somehow the individual, like Obi-Wan as a ghost, like Yoda as a ghost, like Anakin showing up now as Hayden Christensen as a ghost. But what about if it's not that your spirit has been set free? If a body has a soul, and now you have the mind and the memories in another body, where is the soul? Is that essentially the essence of the soul? Are you still you? Or is it that essentially some part of you has been obliterated or set free and you are nothing but a pale copy? Not necessarily a copy of a copy, but a copy nonetheless. You know, it's like the people who go out and buy autographs. You know, it may look like the same signature, but there's the authentic thing and there's the copy. And there's a significant difference between the two, even if once it's framed and up high on the wall, it'll take an observer to really look at it and realize whether this really is a black marker or something that was pre-printed. I think Star Wars has opened up quite a bit to this exploration of what makes someone an individual, you know, what defines the self. And they can't do it anymore with The Force Unleashed, it seems like, because it doesn't look like they're making another story, another game at least. Hayden Blackman has left LucasArts doing his own thing, though now he's writing Star Wars comics, so maybe there's some hope there. But here's this loose end of Jaden Core. And maybe the politics of self, the philosophy of self, they can finally explore more with Jaden if they, for lack of a better term, let Paul Kemp continue this story. If his new duology, hopefully, is a continuation of this rather than something entirely different. Don't get me wrong. You know, if he's writing something that's good and different, I'll be happy with it. You know,
yeah,
just like
absolutely.
Deceived. But it seemed like an extreme missed opportunity for them to not delve into this, even if it's with a totally standalone story, except for the fact that this is the different Jaden dealing with those issues. Kind of like Cross Current, having that, you know, it's got ties to other stuff, but it's basically a standalone adventure. But, you know, you can explore the character's doubts. Now he has different doubts. He's just come to terms with what kind of Jedi he is, and now he has to come to terms with what kind of human is he.
You know, another thing that we really haven't touched on here, we mentioned the Rakuten Mind Sphere, but Mother. Mother, throughout this, was, and I had just got done finishing up with Fate of the Jedi, so of course I kept thinking this Mother had to be Ableth. Everything about it just screamed Ableth. And then we get to the end and we find out, no, it's actually a Rakuten space station. And I found that was a very interesting little twist. You know, two references and stuff about the Rakutens and the fact that the one Sith were so desperately trying to find all this. You know, and of course, the fact that Mother had reached out and found Seer and was drawing the clones there, how coincidental was that? But, hey, Mother was definitely an interesting twist. You know, she was definitely one of the big bads of the story by the time we get to the end. It was definitely an interesting technology, and it was a fun use of the Rakutens.
Yeah, it seems a little weird that we didn't get much more of an explanation of what exactly Mother was once we saw Mother. Like, a lot of it was them trying to draw conclusions based on incomplete knowledge and such. But it's cool to see the Rakuten technology back in these stories, in these later and later stories. It seems like just recently it's like they fired off the starter pistol and said, okay, I'm going to use some Rakuten stuff. Ready, set, go! Because now we have them in Dawn of the Jedi. We have them here. They're being referenced a lot more in the guidebooks and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with more of the Rakuten stuff, and if they try at any point to write stories that take place earlier in the continuity than this, and use a little bit of Rakatan stuff in there as well, because it's kind of like anything else. The like Ahsoka or like Starkiller. Why in all the other stories are they never mentioned? Well, realistically, it's because the stories hadn't been written. But actually, yeah, they probably should have known something, so there must be a reason that nobody ever talks about them. Well, here's what we have now with the Rakatans. You know, for a long time there, they didn't exist. Then comes Knights of the Old Republic, the video game. Since then, they've been dealt with a little bit, and now they're being dealt with on sort of the extremes of the continuity, you know, here near the end, though not at the end, and way back at the beginning. It'll be interesting to see if they work anything in, say, during the Rebellion era, that would deal with Rakatan technology at some point, or anything during the Clone Wars era where somehow Rakatan technology pops back up in some predominant way. Now, it doesn't seem like they're going to. It seems like a lot of that ground's already been covered, but they definitely are, just like they're dealing with the clones more now, now it's like they're dipping into that Rakatan well a lot more often, which is nice.
Well, and you think about Darth Vader and the Ghost Prison, apparently a lot of space stations are hidden on planets and gas giants.
Apparently so.
So that about wraps up our show today. We're just about out of time. Remember, you can listen to our show airing on Middle Earth Network Radio, as well as streaming on the Star Wars Report website, www.starwarsreport.com. Our episodes are also available right here on our Facebook page at SW Beyond Films. I said here because that's where we're at. We're on Facebook right now. Or just type in Star Wars Beyond the Films in the search bar. But no matter how you get there, be sure to like our page. That's right, we even have a contest going. If we can get to 300 likes before Celebration 6, I will personally send you my copy once read of Fatal Alliance, the hardcover. That's by Sean Williams, if you did not know that. Now, don't forget, though, our Facebook is one of the best ways to interact with us. Not only can you post comments to us while listening to the show, you might just be heard. We have feedback episodes. That's right, each month we will release our feedback episodes when there are enough emails to answer. That's why we had a couple months there without. You'll be hearing an episode, well, I think you're going to hear one right before this one comes out, so it'll be about another three or so episodes before another one should come out. Again, that depends on your feedback. I mean, if you fill our mailbag so full, we're going to have to talk to you. So with that, fire them off. Be sure to email us at beyondthefilms@starwarsfanworks.com.
And speaking of new stuff, you can check out, as of August 7th of this year, a brand new edition of the Star Wars Timeline Gold is now available. 2,200 pages thereabouts of Star Wars chronology information for you, along with the Star Wars EU Primer podcast. You can find the Star Wars Timeline Gold at starwarsfanworks.com/timeline. You can find the Star Wars EU Primer podcast, which is sort of a rundown of the Star Wars EU to catch up people who are new to the saga, because you don't really need to have everything be good for newcomers. You can just bone up on the saga. You can find that at starwarsfanworks.com under radio shows.
That's right, the most comprehensive timeline found anywhere.
Heck yeah, it's what I'm here for, sort of.
All right. So, once again, this has been Mark Herleman.
And Nathan Butler.
With Whistler, of course. Thanks for listening, and may the Force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds that Jaden really is evil now, or that they'll ever make books to continue this, or... yeah.
Yeah, like he's changing his name to Jaden.
Yeah, there you go. Jaden.
What if you clone the Force? Would it be the Force? Or the Foose?
The Foose, yeah, the Foose.
Don't quote me, the Foose! Yeah, I know. That was a really bad joke.